medical kits and supplies.
Worldwide broadcast of the Ted and Austin Brower Show with your host, Austin Brower, today bringing you the latest world news and health research. We had Dad on here earlier, and it looks like he dropped off again. Connection has been up and down over there in Europe, but not to worry. Got a lot of interesting articles for you today, and once we get him patched in, he'll just jump right in with the show. Hope you guys are doing wonderful this Friday afternoon. The weather down here in Florida is amazing today. Not trying to brag, but it's pretty nice, I have to say. I first want to start off with to send some prayers out to those guys in Canada right now. I don't know if you've seen that up there towards Alberta. They're having some insanely bad wildfires. I mean, to the point where I think they said now that there's where's the article at here? Yeah, the fire which authorities are calling catastrophic began Sunday in the oil sands region and has grown five times its original size by Thursday. The so-called Fort McMurray fire has already prompted over 88,000 evacuations and destroyed more than 1,600 structures in the town of Fort McMurray. I think that's what it's pronounced it up there. It's pretty bad. I looked at some photos of this online today. And it's horrific up there. I mean, smoke everywhere, ash everywhere, you know, fire all over the place. And the problem is what they're saying is they don't have enough manpower to cover it all with the firefighters that they have. And then everything is so dry, they can't keep up with the suppression of the fire as quickly as it's going. So it's pretty rough. So be with those guys. If we have any listeners, we got a lot of customers that are in Canada. You know, we'll be praying for you guys. Stay out of that stuff if you can. Obviously, everybody's evacuated, so hopefully most people are going to heed the warning and get out of Dodge quickly.
I'm here, Austin.
Hey, bud. Glad to have you with us right here.
Oh, good. I want to comment on these fires real quick. Can you hear me? Can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can hear you now.
Can you hear me okay? Okay.
Yep. Now I can't hear you at all.
We had Apollo 1 caught on fire. Can't hear me at all anymore?
Yeah, you backed out again.
So, can you hear me now?
Yep.
Okay. Okay, tell me if you can hear me.
Yeah, I can hear you. It's just a little choppy.
Too choppy. I'll take a show. I've got a mess. Back in 1967 with Apollo, they had a fire inside of a spaceship. Because the spaceship was almost all aluminum on the inside. The fire burned extremely fast and extremely hot. Now, what happens
explosive. We're not hearing you at all. We're getting like every third word you're saying.
Oh. Not awesome. I love you. Say hi to everybody for me.
All righty. Sorry about that, guys. We've been having consistent issues with this connection over there in Europe. It's been really, really bad the last couple days. And I don't want to put you guys through that as far as listening to him. I know he had some really, really interesting stuff he wanted to talk about today. He had sent me some emails this week. But unfortunately, if they can't get the connection fixed, there's absolutely no reason to have a misunderstood communication throughout the entire show. But what he was referring to back was with the aluminum, with the Apollo, the whole gist of it is that the amount of aluminum that is being sprayed now with the chemtrails, that's why a lot of these fires that we're seeing are burning at such a high level. They're saying that right now the fire is burning between 800 and 1,000 degrees Celsius, making it so hot that officials believe only rain, tremendous amount of rain, would be able to stop it. And so that's something that we would definitely would cause that is raw aluminum. You've seen that before. I mean, you can actually burn aluminum. It burns very, very hot. And the problem is when you start having fires that are very hot and they cannot contact with more aluminum, they just get hotter and they spread faster. So there's a good chance that that's what's going on there right now. And the lack of rain and the lack of snow that they had from all the very strange weather that the entire, you know, world has had in the past couple months, that's what they said, too. There's been no snow, so there's very little melt-off, which made everything really, really dry this spring. and now we see what's going on here. So again, pray for those guys up there. The second story I want to talk about now, this is really cool. Dannon, the company Dannon that produces all the yogurt, all the stuff at the store you always see, they are pretty much had a complete change of heart now, and they're wanting to go full non-GMO. This is pretty cool because a company as big as Dannon, I mean, they should take a huge market share out of the yogurt industry. And if they have a tremendous amount of influence over the dairy industry, and their product standards strongly influence dairy farmers and whether or not cows are fed GMO and antibiotics and stuff like that. So if a company like Dannon starts coming out now and stating, well, I'll tell you what they're saying. It says Dannon is now committed to fighting for all of us, our health, our ecosystems, our future under their new set of standards. Dannon will require the dairy farmers they work with to move away from GMOs and antibiotics in their animal feed. The changes are set to occur over the next 3 years. The company is planning to remove all GMO ingredients from their yogurt and other products. The changes are set to impact everything, all the way down to the quality of soil and how farmers use water. The company's new agricultural sustainability and animal welfare policy will set a new standard for the entire dairy industry. Farmers working with Dannon must now implement sustainable agricultural practices and technology that leads to better soil health, better water management, an increase in biodiversity, and a decrease in carbon emissions. The first changes will be seen as early as July 2016 as the company begins transitioning away from genetically modified ingredients in their most popular brands, which include Dannon, Oikos, and Danimals. Dannon's change of heart began with the company's organic sister brand, Stonyfield Farms, which I've eaten that a little bit when I've eaten dairy. I know Lana likes it. And Happy Farms. The success of the organic brands now has inspired the entire Dannon company to move away from GMOs. And also, too, these guys are smart. They're listening to the public. They see how strong of a positive influence the non-GMO movement is doing in the industry, and moving towards organic ingredients is going to be instrumental as far as for their company. And we also have Vermont's GMO labeling requirement, which I've gone over in detail last couple months, and Dannon is now motivated even more to label any and all of the remaining GMO ingredients in their products nationwide as well. What's really cool about this is that this is a big step. You know, you have Dannon, a company that, like I've said before, has a huge part of the market. And if they start contracting and basically forcing their dairy farmers to act in a more appropriate manner instead of these force-feeding methods, this massive antibiotic and steroid usage, all the junk that they pump into these cows, all the GMO corn they feed them all the time, if they change this, this is going to completely change everything. Because the more we can get back to a good, natural, healthy, organic-based lifestyle, and it comes down to the animals are one of the huge aspects. When I talked about yesterday, we're seeing such a massive over-increase in antibiotics. I read that article to you guys. Like, one out of three antibiotic prescriptions were not even necessary. Another aspect of that, too, is because, again, as I said before, the animals are getting pumped full of these antibiotics all the time. And the thing is, milk, whey, all that stuff is fat, and it holds all the antibiotics, the hormones, very, very strongly when it binds to them. And so you're getting all that, the antibiotics, the hormones, the estrogen, and you're pumping it right in you when you're eating this. So if Dannon really goes through this, and this isn't some type of marketing scheme, which I don't think it is, because their sister brand is the Stonyfield Farms, this is going to be really revolutionary for the entire dairy market, and I'm pretty excited to see this because, not that I'm a huge dairy fan, but the further we can push this non-GMO agenda, especially after Vermont signed that bill, boy, we're actually making progress, guys. We've all done it together. You guys have your demand for non-GMO foods, the radio show, all of us on different shows with Hagman and Hodges and all these guys together. This is what we're trying to do. This is the whole point of everything we're doing, is we're trying to make a change for the positive in the right direction to further ourselves positively, to go towards towards what we know is right and to turn this country around and really change it into what it was supposed to be or what it used to be and what it's supposed to be now. So it's really exciting. Other news now, this is interesting. This is up in New Jersey. Still a New Jersey woman was arrested after she refused to answer questions during a traffic stop in Jersey and has now sued the state police, claiming troopers violated her basic rules by arresting her for remaining silent. And the crazy part about this is the troopers obviously were extremely uneducated in their laws and statutes on here, because as you know, the Fifth Amendment protects a person from being a witness against themselves. That's just simple fact, and that's why we've talked about it so many times on the show here, is do not incriminate yourself. Do not give them information when you're any type of altercation or incident. Don't give them information. I'm not saying don't be polite, don't be respectful, but don't just voluntarily give them information. And this lady did exactly that. And Rebecca Mersara, an attorney, filed the federal civil rights lawsuit after October 16th stop on Route 519 near the border of Pennsylvania and New Jersey. At least three troopers insisted after she was pulled over that refusing to answer questions was a criminal act. These guys, they really said that. And that's why it's so important you know your rights, guys. And I'm not saying you have to be a law student, but understand your basic constitutional rights, like the Fifth Amendment. You see people, you've seen skits and jokes. I know you've seen them before. Where I plead the Fifth, you know, I'm taking the Fifth. And that's just, a term that a lot of people use. But it really is the truth. You have that option. You do not have to incriminate yourself. And now Internal Affairs now says, in the event that problems are identified, training and or disciplinary measures are implemented where appropriate. And so essentially they're looking into this whole situation on the egregious behavior with these guys. The lawsuit states that the troopers pulled Mersara over for suspected speeding, requested her license, registration, and insurance, which she gave them, and then asked if she knew why she was being pulled over, according to the dash camera footage obtained by New Jersey through open records request. Mersara said she provided the documents but did not feel the need to respond to the troopers, which she didn't have to. Now they said, you're going to be placed under arrest if you don't answer my questions, one of the trooper told her before she was handcuffed and taken to the police station. Mersara asked the troopers if she was being detained, and one of the troopers said, yes, you're being arrested for obstruction. Obstruction of what? Being a witness against yourself? No, dude, that's ridiculous. And what's crazy is after when she got to jail, obviously somebody in the bag, one of the supervisors, had some stunt and was like, whoa, guys, first off, she's an attorney. Second off, you guys need to understand what her rights are. They watched the dashboard camera footage and immediately let her go without filing any charges. But now she still filed a lawsuit against them for a civil rights violation, which they completely did. And that's why I've told you guys so many times, man, do not give them information. I mean, I've had so many times when I've been pulled over or something, I'm speeding, whatever. I had pulled over a few times. I mean, I used to ride motorcycles a lot, so I'm not going to sit here and try and paint some halo for my head. And, a lot of times they'll start, just kind of prying questions. Where are you headed? I'm trying to travel freely on my way unmolested. Well, sir, where are you going right now? Where are you coming from? Sir, that's my business. Do you have anything else? Am I free to go? No, I'm writing you a ticket. Okay, whatever. But don't sit there and give them all this information. That's what people do all the time that gets them in a ton of trouble, and never consent to letting them search your vehicle, period. This attorney knew exactly her rights, and that's why she's filed a lawsuit against them. And the troopers should have had enough, mental acuity going on to realize that this is probably a bad decision. But the truth is, most people don't know their rights. And these troopers, they get in there and they say, you have to answer us. We'll force you to answer us. We're going to take you to jail. No, you don't have to answer anything. You don't. You can be silent. That's the beauty of the United States Constitution, is that it provides us with that Fifth Amendment that we don't have to incriminate ourselves. So I thought that was definitely interesting, too. Let me see here. This is also an interesting story. State Department now is delaying Freedom of Information's request on Clinton email security till after the election. As you guys know, a lot of different news companies have been filing FOIA requests, which are Freedom of Information Act, to get information on how the emails were breached and stuff like that with Clinton's whole entire email debacle. I'm not going to go into all of it. If you want to read about it online, you can. We don't like to talk about it so much. But what's interesting now is it just goes to show you how corrupt this thing is. It says the State Department says it will need a year and a half to turn over documents from Hillary Clinton's email procedures. The particular request pertains to information on how the State Department secured Hillary's homebrew server against security threats, which is something voters deserve to know before the election. And now they're saying that it will be later than December 2016, of course, which is just after the election, and that the process is a complete and total mess. This is what this person says on here. This is from Jason Kobler, it looks like. And, he said, this is the Freedom of Information process, notorious mess, but it's patently ridiculous that records pertaining to security practices of someone who stands a very good chance of running the country and thus being in possession of highly sensitive documents all the time won't be made available to the public a year and a half after they were requested. And this, again, guys, just goes to show you what we've discussed before, how they're not going to let her get indicted. They're doing everything they can to put her in office. They've been planning this back from the 90s. I guarantee you they have. She's going to be their little New World Order puppet that they want. And that's why Trump has thrown such a wrench. That's why this is the first time in my life, from what I've seen personally, I'm sure this has happened before, but this is the strongest opposition I have ever seen in my entire life against a presidential candidate. I mean, it's insane. The hatred, the racism, the language, just the absolute propaganda and lies that I've seen spread about Trump it's crazy to me. It really is, because, like I said, I've never seen it to this extent before. And that just goes to show you that everything he stands for, they are against. They do not want him being in office. They want to do everything they can to keep him out of office. And, I mean, now that Cruz dropped out, like Dad said yesterday, I don't know if it was accurate or not. I looked into it a little bit more, and it seems to be that information keeps coming up, is that Cruz's dad was somehow involved with the JFK assassination, and that was going to get leaked to the press, and that's why Cruz dropped out so abruptly, because like I told you when I came on the show at the end of the week, I said, there's something weird about this whole incident. I said, the fact that he did that, like I said, I don't know if they told him that there's something going on. I don't know. There's something definitely really, really weird about it. Article now as far as with the with medical errors, and we wrote an article about this on our website at healthmasters.com. You can go online and read it there. We did this years ago, actually. And another article now was just released again by BMJ, and John Rappaport actually wrote on it. It's a really good article, and it goes into detail. The actual article published in BMJ on Tuesday was Medical Error, the Third Leading Cause of Death in the U.S., and it shows that medical errors in hospitals and other healthcare facilities are incredibly common and may now be the third leading cause of death in the United States, claiming over 251,000 lives every year, more than respiratory disease, accidents, strokes, and Alzheimer's. And this is what I've brought up so many times to you guys when we discuss stuff like gun control, when you start seeing these liberal puppets run at the mouth about how we need to restrict firearms, and you actually do the legitimate numbers and find out when you take out gun-related homicides from gang members and you take out suicides, there's roughly 9,000 to 11,000 deaths per year that are firearm related. That's it. And then when you start looking at this, that this isn't caused by the disease. This isn't deaths from cancer or anything. This is deaths simply from medical error. From a doctor making a mistake, from him twittering or tweeting on his phone while he's doing open heart surgery and drops a scalpel and cuts one of the arteries off. I'm just being sarcastic, but just stupid stuff that really could have been avoided. And I'm not saying, obviously, nothing bad it can ever happen with surgery, but that's why, on earlier on the show this week, we told you guys, you know, it's so important to do the best you can to stay as healthy as you can naturally. That the thing is, if you maintain it and you continue maintaining it, it's so much easier than constantly going to the doctor, because every time they take you to the doctor, all they want to do is cut on you. They always want to cut on you or give you more meds or do something else. And it's interesting, because I had a customer, newer customer, who's been a real good customer so far. He wanted to help out his grandson and with some different stuff with the colon, some colitis issues, basically, problems that were going on. So we got some of the key products that we have, you know, the GHI cleanse, the detoxificant, a couple other ones. And the problem was, his grandson's mother, which is his daughter, I'm pretty sure, is involved in the medical field. Like, I think she's an RN or something like that, and basically refuses to allow his grandson to take these supplements. And he's returned them now, sadly. And so, I mean, we told him we got a 90-day money-back guarantee. So, I mean, if something happens, you know, we really would prefer people get to try them and use them and see how good they work. And but, again, you know, sometimes you can't do that. But it just shows you that people in the medical industry, a large portion of them, are so brainwashed into thinking there's no other option. Everything has to be either through drugs or surgery. There is nothing else. There is nothing in between. It's drugs or surgery, period. And, guys, that's not the way it has to be. There's so many natural options for stuff, and that's why we try and give you guys the best information we can on this show and on the website at healthmasters.com. And we got hundreds of articles on there you can browse and go into detail. We got videos on there that Dad has done. I think we got 15, 20 different videos uploaded on there on all kinds of different detailed stuff. And that's what we do. We have our free newsletter. You can go and sign up for our free weekly newsletter at healthmasters.com. And we send various stuff out during the week and keep you informed about just different things. A lot of the really new stuff, though, we cover on the radio show simply because this is taking so much time. And but, you know, we appreciate the support, guys. We appreciate you guys sending the emails in. We appreciate everything. And that's just, you know, we really do. And back to this article as far as the medical errors, they got a little sidetracked there. Martin McCurry, a professor of surgeon at the Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine, who led the research in this article that I just mentioned, medical error, the third leading cause of death in the U.S., he led the research, said in an interview that the category includes everything from bad doctors to more systematic issues such as communication breakdowns when patients are handed off from one department to another. He says it simply boils down to people dying from the care that they receive rather than the disease for which they are seeking care. Guys, this is coming from a professor of surgery at Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine. I'm going to repeat what he just said. He goes, it simply boils down to people dying from the care that they receive rather than the disease for which they are seeking care. And with his calculation, over 251,000 deaths, like I told you earlier, that's nearly 700 deaths a day. 700 deaths a day. Now, you tell me right now, if we started having 700 gun homicides every single day of the year, all year, every year, all the time, you tell me it would not be all over the media to the point where the media would be revolting, saying that we're not going to cover this anymore unless you ban guns. Tell me I'm wrong. There's not a single fact that anybody can deny that that's exactly what happened. We had 700 gun deaths every single day, gun murders, every day, all day, every year. That's what happens with medical error deaths. Over 250,000 a year, over 700 deaths a day. And that's exactly what he said in here. It has nothing to do with the disease. It has nothing to do with what's going on in their body. It's simply a mistake because they went in and either a doctor did something, another issue with communication, whatever it is, as he just mentioned out. But the easiest way to avoid this, guys, is to stay out of the hospital unless you absolutely have to go. I can't tell you how many people I've known in my life. I feel like every time I talk to them, they're going to the hospital for something. Every time. And it matters stupid stuff. Like, oh, I got a runny nose. I'm going back to the hospital again. I go to the doctor. Get antibiotics. My throat hurts. Gosh, we talked about that yesterday. It was so easy. Different supplements you can take, you know, to make sure you keep your inflammation from getting in your tonsils, keeping your nose from running, to keep your entire immune system strong. That's why we put the immune survival kit on the website. But you don't have to go to the doctor. The doctor is there for good reason sometimes. Sometimes you need to go. I mean, if you have a vehicle accident, you have a compound fracture, and your forearm sticking out of your arm, hitting you in the face, well, you probably need a good surgeon to set that bone back in place. That is an incredibly important task, and it needs to be done immediately with care. That's exactly what a doctor's there for. But this type of behavior now, and the fact that it has gone this far and doesn't even receive media coverage anymore, I'm just glad it finally reached the British Journal of Medicine, and they've done this research now, and I hope more and more people are going to get this out and say, hey, we have a problem here, guys. We either need different type of training, different type of communication. We need something different, and the one thing we don't need more of is more money to pay to health insurance that we don't need. I mean, it's frustrating enough paying the penalty every year now because I don't have health insurance, and I don't even use anything with that. I don't go to the doctor. It's frustrating. And so, yeah, guys, just giving you a heads up, do the best you can. Always get a second opinion. Always use the doctor as a last resort option. That's what I tell people all the time when they ask about supplements. I say, listen, we have these supplements here. You can try them. If they don't work, you can return them. And that's it. You really have lost nothing out. And the doctor, the surgery, is always there. It's always an option that's on the back. But why don't you try everything you can naturally with diet, health, exercise, supplementation, and try everything to see what you can do to see if you can probably fix it with maybe some turmeric and vitamin C, something as simple as that. And if you can't, if you try and exhaust every single natural resource and it's still an issue that needs to get addressed, then you got the doctor. That's what it's there for. So, yeah, that's my little rant on medical errors today, because it's sad. I mean, over a quarter of a million people a year, that's a significant number. This is an article from Claire Burnish. I've talked about this a few times now, with the massive influx of opiate usage in the United States, and Taz talked about it too, how it was intentionally done, A, to increase the profits of Big Pharma, which I'm about to go to in a second. This is a new article now. It's pretty interesting. And also, B, to encourage this type of opiate usage to get people hooked on it, so when they start retracting or contracting the pharmaceutical prescription opiate market, people are going to go to cheaper, more readily available options like heroin, which is why we're seeing an epidemic of heroin in the United States now. And if you don't believe so, go online and just do a little research. I've talked about it before as far as my uncle ended up ODing last year. This is a serious problem. I mean, it's a very serious problem in the United States. And, you know, I'm not saying it's not the people's fault because they took a choice to get involved with this, but a lot of times, guys, it was something simple as, you know, a broken collarbone or a strained back, and these doctors start putting them on OxyContin. And before long, they're completely hooked on opiates, can't even function without opiates, and groveling to their doctor every couple weeks to get another prescription at a stronger dose, just so they can get their opiate fixed, because something as simple as, you know, back pain or, you know, a back strain or just even a broken bone that only needed, you know, 4 to 6 weeks to heal with proper nutrients. And that's a side note, too. I had a friend of mine break his wrist a while back, and he had got a bottle of the Ultimate Bone Support, which is the full name is on an Osteoplex MK7. We have it on our website at healthmasters.com. We also have a more base version, which is our Awesome Mag, which most of you guys know. We use our MCHC calcium, which is microcrystalline hydroxy concentrate. It's derived from New Zealand bovine, and it's actually clinically been shown to go directly to the bone, and help out with bone density. And I had this buddy, he grabbed a can from me when he broke his wrist, and you know, he got the x-rays done, obviously, the day he broke it, and it was broke. And so he started on this stuff, and he went back, I think, 3 or 4 weeks later, and was completely healed up. Yeah, I mean, couldn't even find the seam. They didn't know where the break was at anymore. They thought they made a mistake before until they compared the old x-rays to it. And it was like 3 to 4 weeks of the Ultimate Bone Support. That was it. So that's just a side note, guys. If you get a bone fracture, a bone break, or a family member, your son does, you know, a bicycle accident, whatever, and you want to heal it up really fast, that's the product to go to. I was extremely impressed when I saw those results from that. Now, if you're a male, you know, this isn't something you want to take on a regular basis. Again, if you have something like a bone fracture, yes, you definitely want to address it and heal up as quickly as possible. But for males, they really don't need additional amounts of massive calcium unless you really need it for a specific reason with overall bone health. But I just wanted to address that as another side note while I was thinking about it. But again, back to this article, it says in here, Big Pharma created the legal opiate addiction epidemic and its outgrowth rampant heroin abuse because pharmaceutical corporations' own addiction to profit arguably trumps any concern it may have had for patients. Though the accusation may seem harsh, the evidence has never been more apparent thanks to an investigation by Los Angeles Times, which presents a scathing condemnation of the company behind the notorious painkiller OxyContin. And they are the main ones that started this because they are the ones that originally came out with the OxyContin, which is the controlled-release oxycodone hydrochloride tablets, which were designed to break down over an extended period of time. And what they did was, see, when you take like a morphine tab or you take a Percocet or a Vicodin, any of these ones that are just very base, they have a rapid spike in the bloodstream, the opiate does its job, and then what happens is it tapers off fairly quickly. Opiates, especially those in low dosages, you know, I think normal Vicodins or Percocets have like 5 milligrams of oxycodone in it. It's a very low dose. It does the job, and then it tapers off rapidly, so it doesn't constantly stimulate those opiate receptors. Well, what OxyContin did is they came out with it, and it was considered a 12-hour controlled release. So you only needed one pill twice a day, essentially. You know, basically one when you woke up and one when you went to bed. And the issue, what this started, was a opiate epidemic because so many people were getting hooked on this stuff because it constantly lingered in the system for hours and hours and hours and hours and hours and hours, leaving the opiate receptors craving it after it was discontinued, especially when OxyContin has been used. I think they say within like 3 weeks of OxyContin usage, you would technically be legally addicted to opiates if they've checked you as far as classification. So back to the article, I just want to address that real quick ago. 2 decades ago, Purdue Pharma began marketing OxyContin, which is oxycodone, which is basically a synthetic version of heroin, is what it is, to make it simple, with its claim that it was a 12-hour smooth and sustained dosing, and it would revolutionize the treatment of pain. However, the claim is not only problematic in that its duration is awfully less than promised, leading patients to experience symptoms with withdrawal, but Purdue knew that before the painkillers even hit the market. As the Times discovered, Purdue's push to market OxyContin, one of the most abused pharmaceuticals in history, flatly and continually ignored all reports from sales reps, complaints from doctors, and independent research on the drug, all in the name of profit. Indeed, profit, Purdue, the company, reaped in billions and billions of dollars in revenue over OxyContin's troubled 20-year stranglehold on the painkiller market, and ignoring complaints and research contradictory to its extended relief claim is key to Purdue's continued success with hundreds of dollars per bottle drug, since mild opiate painkillers may indeed offer similar, if not more effective, benefits. Because Purdue pressured doctors and sales reps to maintain the 12-hour dosing restriction, doctors often increased the prescribed potency. More than half of long-term OxyContin users are on doses that public health officials consider dangerously high, according to analysis of the nationwide prescription data conducted by the Times. Now, and it goes into detail all this different stuff in here as far as usage on and everything else. And back to Purdue, this is interesting. Purdue's advertising for marketing OxyContin, however, focused on that 12-hour dose, with ads stating plainly, remember, effective relief just takes two, meaning you take two of them a day, like I mentioned before. Indeed, the tactic worked so well, OxyContin's profits exponentially topped those of its pharmaceutical predecessor, MS Cotton, more than doubling MS's most successful profits in just its third year on the market. By its fifth year, OxyContin was pulling in $1 billion in profits annually, all the way up till 2010 at $3 billion a year in profit annually. Purdue Pharma is owned by the ultra-rich family, who is also responsible for MS Cotton, and as the Times describes, the success of OxyContin brought a whole new level of wealth. Forbes magazine last year estimated the Sacklers worth at least $14 billion, which, as the magazine noted, put the family ahead of the American dynasties such as the Mellons and the Rockefellers, which I don't know if I believe all that. As far as I think the people, as we've discussed here multiple times, the people that are the wealthiest people around in America don't even get any publicity because they don't want it. They own the publicity. They own the media, such as the Rothschilds. But it's interesting. They still don't talk in this article about the importation of opium and the increased usage of opium, but they do bring up one paragraph here at the end that I wanted to address. It just slightly touches on it, not as much as I wish they would have addressed it, but I guess this article was primarily from Claire, was primarily aimed at, you know, exploiting OxyContin and what they did to the market and how they essentially became multi-billionaires off-hooking people on opiates. I mean, that's what a sad way to make your living, honestly. It's like making your living as like a crack dealer. I mean, that's great. Okay, you're a millionaire. You sell crack. Congratulations. You're a real benefit to society. Like, you made OxyContin. You hooked hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people on opiates and then got them hooked on heroin. If they didn't get hooked on heroin, they had to go on methadone to try and withdraw from your product. Wow, you really contributed something to history, didn't you? Anyways, the last paragraph I want to say here says, as lawmakers continue to make these prescription drugs harder to obtain, surprise, surprise, the addicted masses are turning towards the black market to stifle their craving. The result of such a deadly combination of pushing legal addicts into the illegal realm is manifesting through skyrocketing overdose rates, which I've talked about before, more police crackdowns, and cheaper and more dangerous heroin. So it really hits from two sides, guys. Now, and I'm not saying the entire aspect of OxyContin was to get people on heroin. I'm saying that I guarantee you it was a side note when it was started that there could be a possibility with the federal government allowing this amount of opiates to be prescribed. But what happens is now that this market from OxyContin is exploding in the illegal realm, the reason why the United States government wants to keep feeding it is because of two things. A, the billions of dollars annually a year it gets to make off its heroin imports, primarily out of Afghanistan, and B, the prison industrial complex. Oh, yes, the thing that most people never want to talk about, the prison industrial complex, and why so many people go to jail that are simply low-level like dealers or users at that that are hooked on these drugs and really need help, need prayer, need support to get off of them, and they don't need to be incarcerated for 2 and 3 years in a federal penitentiary because they are possessed in possession of this stuff. It's nonsense. But you see how everything slowly turned exactly the way that it is now, and it wasn't by accident, guys. This was not some accident that was, OxyContin got released onto the market, you know, and everybody got hooked on it. I'm sure that was just one of those things that was, you know, just random by chance. No, that was definitely not something that was by random chance at all. And I mean, and then you have, you know, heroin being a Scheduled One, so it's immediately a felony to even have residue of that compound on you. And so it's something you got to look at and really have to understand that you got to feel sorry for these guys. Now, the guys that are trying to bring this stuff in, the government officials that are importing this stuff, no, that's the there's nothing to feel sorry about that. Those guys are sadistic. I mean, they need to be locked up. There's no question about that. But we need to offer help and support for a lot of these people that have gotten involved in this. And that's the best thing we could do for them. Another article from on Donald Trump on MSNBC, he told earlier yesterday, I think he said, that he was going to stick to his controversial policy on Muslim immigration because the migrant crisis is destroying Europe. And this is what I've told you guys repeatedly. We got family over there. Mom and dad are over there right now. Wish I could have had him on the show today. He had a lot of great information. But I'm sure he'll be traveling somewhere different on Monday. So hopefully we can get a good connection and catch up on Monday. But the what's going on in Europe is not a joke. It's a really significant problem. And I know I keep bringing it up, and a lot of people are probably sick of me bringing it up. But to me, it's really serious because, A, I have a significant amount of family that lives over there, and, B, the media is refusing to report on it. So it's something that I feel that it needs to be addressed, and we need to do anything we can to help them out, and also in turn do everything we also can to prevent it from happening here in the United States with this radical satanic religion that's called Islam. In Trump's proposal to place a temporary halt on Muslim immigration in the United States, they said was perhaps his most incendiary of his campaign, but the New York billionaire shows no signs of walking it back. Asked if he still believed Muslims should be banned from entering the country until we can figure out what's going on, Trump said he didn't care if the policy hurt his chance in the general election. He said, look at what's happening. It's terrible what they have done to some of these countries over there, and they're going to destroy them, and they're destroying Europe. I'm not going to let that happen in the United States, said Trump, chiding Obama for refusing to even use the term radical Islamic terrorism. And it's the truth. He won't address any of that. And so it's something that if nobody wants to address it, Trump's going to address it, because he seems to be addressing a lot of this stuff lately that nobody wants to address, which I'm pretty glad to hear, and that's why we've issued so much support for him. Also, too, we talked to him yesterday, if you guys heard the show, about the removal of the 500-euro bill now in Europe, which this is huge, by the way, and I don't remember if we addressed it yesterday, but one thing I wanted to say is that for the people in Europe also, too, the reason why they're pushing so hard, because they're more than likely, what we're going to see is Europe, obviously, we saw what happened with the European Union. That was a very globalist tactic, you know, combining all the countries into the EU. So more than likely, what we're going to see is Europe is probably going to be the first test run of a digital currency. I could be wrong on that. But I have a good feeling that it more than likely will be. Possibly China, maybe both of them at the same time, I don't know. But here's why. Europe is having such a tremendous problem with Muslim immigration because of what they're doing intentionally, but nonetheless, they're having a significant issue. So, and they have issues. They've had multiple terrorist problems over there. They're having a giant, just Islamic nightmare. So what a good chance they're going to do, now that they've already dropped 500 euros, this isn't like a joke. This isn't like, hey, you know, we're going to probably phase this out in 20 or 30 years. They say it's going to be completely wiped out, I think, within 3 years. I said in that article earlier. I mean, it's coming to, 2018. So basically within about a year and a half, it's going to be completely done, complete. And what they'll do is every time somebody uses one on any type of transaction, whether it be at a grocery store, a movie theater, a bank, the currency will immediately be collected, and any time it passes through anywhere, they'll issue orders to trade in the money for either the 100 or 200 euro bills. And so they're going to collect the 500 euro bills out of circulation very, very, very quickly. And then what they'll end up doing is they'll end up saying, hey, we're having a period now, a grace period. We're telling you if you have 500 euro bills stacked up, if you have them anywhere, you need to report them to your local bank immediately, turn them in for smaller bills, within 6 months or a year, or else the currency is basically going to be worthless. We're going to consider it, fake currency or bad currency or terrorist currency, whatever they want to say. The reason why I'm saying this is because there's a good possibility Europe is going to transition into the digital currency to combat global terrorism, as you see what they've already done with the EU and the globalization of all those countries over there. They're probably going to do it first, because I still think there's enough people in America, even though everybody uses their credit cards here a lot in the United States, I think there's a lot of old school people of us left that are pretty significantly irritated and would probably start up quite a stir if they started doing this. But, we've already seen now how they already have, the EBT, the food stamps, the SNAP programs, all that now is completely digital, to my knowledge. They still may offer the actual food stamps, the break-off ones like they used to have. I don't think they do. I haven't seen them in a long time. Every time I've seen somebody use them in a store, it's always with the card, the EBT card. So there's a good possibility that's going to usher it in as well, because they're getting everybody conditioned to use the cards and to stick with the cards and whatnot. So I don't know. We'll see what happens with that, but I definitely want to make sure I keep everybody informed, as I told you I would do, to be aware of what's going on with the global economy. And that's why it was so refreshing to hear Donald Trump in his foreign policy speech last week talk about the globalization is not something that we're trying to encourage. We're trying to focus on the United States. It is not something that, you know, we want to do and have our entire country be globalized, like with the TPP and everything else. It's just not something that's beneficial. This article I found, it was actually a couple weeks ago. I never got to go over it, though, so I wanted to go over it. An anonymous gun dealer in Arizona recently recounted how he participated in selling multiple guns to straw purchasers amid Operation Fast and the Furious back in 2009 at the behest of the United States Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives, good old ATF. Did you guys know how much I love ATF? What's crazy is he owned a gun store. He used to work at a Phoenix gun store, and he was contacted by ATF after making a couple Barrett 50 caliber rifle sales to suspicious people. And what was going on, he said he was working at a large gun store in Phoenix, and he got a phone call one day on the line. The guy was looking for a Barrett, he said, which is not a crazy weapon in terms of how available they were. Dealer describes how the high caliber rifle is powerful enough to shoot through a light tank and was highly popular among straw purchasers who would pay bundles of cash, rarely purchase accessories, and really knew nothing about the gun. So he says, I'm ringing up the transaction. He has one of those little drawstring bags, the kid that comes in. He pulls out a whole bag full of cash, pulls out 10 grand and rubber banded, and gives him the cash. Didn't want any ammo, didn't want any optics, didn't want anything with it at all. That was it. Just wanted the gun. And he passed the background check, and everything went through, and he left. And then he said he started getting, like, all of a sudden, at that point, he said before that, you know, he'd get a phone call here and there, you know, once every week, 2 or 3 weeks, somebody calling asking about a Barrett, this and that. That's, you know, not a crazy gun to get questions on. Really cool weapon. 50 caliber magazine-fed sniper rifle. It's a cool gun. We got it in video games, for goodness sake. It's awesome. But he said after this transaction, he started getting phone calls repeatedly, over and over again, the same questions. He had 4, 5, 6 guys come in. The first guys came in 5 or 6 times and said they were starting a collection. And he said, you'll buy 5 or 6 of the same $10,000 rifle for a collection. At that point, the ATF was contacted. But rather than put a stop to the sale, they told the employee to keep selling to the straw purchasers and, in addition, fill out paperwork for the agency. He specifically said, the ATF said, don't refuse them, just let them go, do it, and we're on the commission at the time, so all of us involved are like, sweet, as the guy said on here. He goes, we got to the point where I'd give ATF our cell phone numbers. They only wanted a couple of us dealing with it, fill out the forms, have the money counted so we could bring drug dogs in to check the bills for drugs. There were undercover agents in the store sometimes. Once the ATF was more involved, we had a separate set of paperwork. They took their 4473s, which is the form you fill out, and transcribed all of it, then asked what type of transaction was, how many hundreds, fifties, tens, blah, blah, blah. Do you feel they knew what they were buying? Did they buy any ammo, accessories, this and that? And he said what's crazy is that they never not one time contacted these guys that he knew of, and not one time stopped any of these guys. They continued to let these guys come in, and he said a lot of them were Hispanic, and they would come in and buy these guns in cash, pass a background check, and walk out. Literally, one guy's walking out with 4 and 5 Barretts. And like he said, you don't buy 4 and 5 $10,000 rifles for your gun collection. Most people at best would be able to have one Barrett in their gun collection, and that would still be really cool. Nobody has 4 or 5 of these. And so this right here is just another account of what really, really happened over the Fast and the Furious debacle, and how not only was ATF running guns directly into Mexico and then allowed them to get taken on purpose, in my opinion, they were intentionally allowing straw purchasers to come into this dealer, and they knew what was going on, and they still allowed these guys to buy all these Barretts, didn't contact them, didn't stop them, didn't say, hey, you know, we need to hold on this transaction until an ATF agent gets here. He just wants to ask you questions. And quite frankly, I'm not even, and granted, I'm not a fan of ATF, you guys know that. But if I go into a store and I drop $50,000 in cash and I'm buying five Barrett 50 caliber rifles at the same time on a same form, and the dealer goes, hey, if you don't mind, we got an ATF agent coming in. He just wants to ask you a couple questions before you take possession of the rifle. I'm pretty much going to tell you I would be expecting that. I can't imagine anybody that would not be expecting that. And if I didn't have any problem when I wasn't doing anything illegal, then I wouldn't have an issue talking to them and say, hey, it's my legal right, Second Amendment right. There's no restriction on how many 50 cals I can buy. I'm going to keep buying them all up, buy. And you guys just get over it. But they didn't. Not once did they contact them. Not once did they stop them. They just let them go out with it. And he said, to his knowledge, he never found any of those guys ever got arrested. None of those firearms were ever recovered. They just disappeared. Nobody ever knew what happened to them. They just kind of just, obviously, well, we know where they went. They just got dissolved into the market down there in Mexico. And then the last, the article a couple months ago I brought up was the undercover guy that was working with it and said how they were going to Morocco and all these weapons were actually getting transferred over to Africa as well through Mexico, and it wasn't 2,200 machine guns and 50s like they had reportedly said. It was more along the lines like 50 or 60,000 weapons that they were trading in the black market down there and let go, and then were transferring them over to Africa. So that whole situation, it was a debacle. We knew what the ATF was doing. I think there was multiple reasons behind it, and one of the primary reasons I thought, and I still believe so, is arming a lot of the cartel and the drug cartel down there with these weapons, as many as they can get, so whenever something does happen, if we do have some type of breakdown in society, you're going to have a lot of these really, really sadistic gang members that have weapons that, honestly, they shouldn't be in possession of, and B, they would not really have access to anywhere else. That's the thing about the Barrett, is it's not usually a readily available weapon on the open market as far as used guns. They don't make that many of them. There's just not a whole lot of them floating around. So it's a gun that's a very niche market. I mean, it's a big caliber round. It's heavy. It's very accurate. But it's a niche gun. So you don't have a lot of people that are trying to buy it. So it's not something you can go find really easily for a used market. So when you start having guys come in and buy five and six of these new, you know there's something up. You know they're straw purchases. You absolutely know without a shadow of a doubt. And again, we see that ATF did absolutely nothing about it, which just goes to show you that they're pretty much a rogue agency. They operate under their own statutes, their own guidelines. They follow nobody's rules. If you don't believe me, just do a little bit of research on them. See how they handled Waco with the FBI. That was one of the biggest debacles in U.S. history. That I don't even want to get into that. That was just going to put me in a foul mood. I don't want to do that. It's too nice of a weather on a Friday afternoon. But again, guys, I appreciate everything you guys have done. The emails. Oh, and I had a customer email me up the other day about chemtrails, and you know we're all breathing the same air. He said, so what are these elite? Are they getting like oxygen therapy? Are they getting? How are they getting prevented from inhaling a lot of this garbage? And quite frankly, I don't know the entire answer to that. I really don't know. I do know I can speculate a little bit on that. A, the fact that I remember about 6 years ago when King Obama decided he was going to come down to Disney World for like 2 or 3 days down here in Central Florida. And as you guys know, we're about 30 minutes from Disney. I remember it was like out of nowhere. It started, it was like 2 weeks before he was scheduled to come down here. It rained for like 2 days straight. And after that, there were no chemtrails. Not a single, granted, I don't even remember I saw a plane for like 2 weeks. And I mean, it was the cleanest, clearest, bluest sky we had seen in years after about a week of no chemtrails. I remember me and Dad were talking about it. And I was like, it's really crazy how, you know, we don't see see any of it. Because you got to remember, guys, they're spraying this stuff out of tanker planes way up in the atmosphere, but it still has a metal composition to it. You know, it's got aluminum, barium. This is heavier than air, so it's going to fall. It's going to drop. So the amount that you spray in the air, it's not going to stay up in the air forever. It can't stay up there indefinitely. It's going to fall down, and it comes down to the surface. And so when we saw that happen, and, you know, King Obama came down to Disney, it was some of the best weather we had ever seen. And that's when I pretty much, and I was already awake then, but that's when I realized, wow, they really do manipulate and control these chemtrails, the weather, as much as they want to do, when they want to do it, how they want to do it. So to answer that question, A, yes, I think they manipulate and control the timing of the chemtrails. When they go places, when they're at areas, they don't want to spray it. Because when this isn't happening, every single square inch of every single country, 24/7, 365, there's been numerous times here in Florida where all of a sudden we'll go 2 or 3 days and there won't be a single chemtrail in the sky, and then all of a sudden we'll just get bombarded. So I think there's a very, very significant tactic to what they're doing and the strategy and how they do it. Secondly, a lot of these guys, I think they're eating their own organic food, their own homegrown greenhouse food. I mean, when you're a multi-billionaire, trillionaire, you can just do stuff like that. It doesn't matter. It's just money. You just print more of the Federal Reserve, you know. Hey, Bobby, print me up another $1 trillion. I need to open up another organic greenhouse. It's not difficult to do. So that's basically my take on it. And then you also may have some of these guys that they've brought up before that are part of the Nephilim race, that they may somehow like or feed off this aluminum or barium that's in the air. But I have a difficult time believing that, simply because aluminum and barium is almost toxic to any living substance, especially when it's breathed into it from a raw form. So I don't really see that being a plausible, idea. But honestly, I think it's just strategic. I think they do it when they want to do it, how they want to do it. And, you know, the upper key elite that know what's going on, that are controlling all this, what do you think, they're not in contact with anybody that's flying this stuff? They just call them up, hey, you need to ground the planes in this area for 2 weeks. I'm coming in. I don't want any chemtrails in the sky. And they just kind of, you know, they have a little opening of just positive air that just floats around with no chemtrails, honestly. That's my best option for you guys. So answer that. That's what I think. But anyways, it's been a great show. It's Friday. You guys have a blessed night. Have a great weekend. Be safe. Hopefully I can get Dad back on with good service on Monday. Give you guys some great info. Check us out at healthmasters.com over the weekend if you guys need anything. You guys be safe. Have a blessed night. Talk to you Monday. Good night.
On Facebook, on the news, and in conversations with friends, we're bombarded every day with advice on how to be healthier, from gluten-free and non-GMO diets to how much exercise and sleep the body needs. But how much have you heard about alkalizing the body? AlkaVision Plasma pH Drops are a holistic and natural way to get your body's pH levels back in balance. Just a few drops in water will help your body rid itself of harmful waste, and even the healthiest of diets can be complemented with your daily use of AlkaVision Plasma pH Drops. Who isn't looking for more vibrance, vigor, and energy?